Good evening. Today is March 12th, 2024, and we are studying the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter step is.
I think I was assigned the 12 traditions, which is appendices number one. I hope so because that's what I prepared.
Thank you so much for
You're
asking.
very welcome.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're doing wonderfully.
Thanks. And our speaker tonight is Francis, who is so wonderful to step up to. Okay, so you speak for 20 minutes. Okay.
Starting now.
Yeah, so if you want to start now. Oh, good evening.
Great.
And our
Mindy,
speaker
thank
tonight
you
is
so
Francis.
much.
Thank you so much, Francis.
No, it's a special treat to start a meeting when somebody steps up to the plate at the last minute to fill a spot, especially if they haven't done that before. And so it really touches my heart. It reminds me of when I first was at a meeting where I hosted, and it just seemed like everything went wrong and everyone was kind to me. And it was great. It's always great to give service. And so I thank you, Mindy. And I've never been to this meeting, so I don't know who's responsible for what, but I know that it is many hands that make light work. And so I thank all those hands for the work that they do tonight to make a meeting possible for me. It's always beneficial to me and to my recovery to come to any meeting, either attending, giving service. Well, just attending is giving service, really. There's no meeting without people sitting in chairs or in the little Zoom boxes that we've become accustomed to for some of our meetings. I don't know if there are newcomers here or not, but I always like to start with a couple of big disclaimers. My name is Frances. I'm a grateful recovering overeater. I do not speak for OA. I'm not a representative of OA. I am just another bozo on the bus, and I am here to share my experience, strength, and hope. I hope that you will hear something that is helpful to you in some way. And I encourage people to keep coming back. If you don't hear something helpful from me, you'll certainly hear it from someone else. So, with that said, I'm just going to begin with the fact that I got the biggest kick out of what I was assigned to read. A person that I've known, a fellow for quite some time in OA, approached me and asked me if I would speak at this meeting and gave me a date and gave me a very strange assignment from the big book, something that I was not at all familiar with. And I, for whatever reason, I said, okay, I tend to serve whenever I'm asked to. That's part of the traditions. We'll get to that. But then he got back in touch with me and said, no, somebody, there are multiple speaker getters. Somebody already gave that date away. Can you do this date? And I said, okay. And then he said, appendices one. And I said, I don't even know what that is. What is appendices one? He said, oh, it's the traditions. And I thought, ooh, the traditions. But I'm glad that I got them. It made me sit down and read them in the big book, which I had never done before. I actually have been in program for over 4 years. I have been absent now. I passed my 4 year anniversary in February. And thank you. And when I first came into OA to in-person meetings, because they were in person then, the first piece of literature I bought, because I went to the meeting, and I don't know how many of you go to in-person meetings, but one of the things that's often said is that if there are any newcomers in the meeting, as they begin to pass the basket, they always say, you know, if you're a newcomer, you don't need to contribute anything to the basket. Save your money, buy literature. So I thought I'd be polite. I would buy something. And I saw this one book that was, I've got a book protector on it from my kids when they were in school. They're all grown and gone from home. But I bought this really big book and it was $8. And I thought, what a bargain. I'll just buy that book. And I took it home and then I opened it up and it said it was an Alcoholics Anonymous book. And I thought, I don't drink. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't need this book. And I promptly stuck it on my shelf. And I think the first year of my recovery, I probably never ever opened it. I remember that, you know, I being told many, many times that the big book applied to people of many different addictions, including food, and that it would be helpful. But I just didn't see how it could be when I would read the stories, because I do like stories. They didn't resonate with me at all. They didn't make any sense to me. It wasn't until I'd been in program for over a year that I began to be exposed to parts of the book, and they began to make sense for me. And the recovery that people had began to mirror the recovery that I was having. Some of the challenges that they had, those resonated with the challenges that I had. And I won't share a whole lot about my past, but I can tell you that I did not come into OA until I was in my 50s. But I struggled with food all my life, all my life. And I don't think most people would have known that for most of my early life, because I was athletic and very active, and I could eat tons of food. And people did not know what I was doing with food. It wasn't until I was married and had a pregnancy where I got up to almost 200 pounds, and then another pregnancy where I got up to, you know, within less than 5 pounds of 200 pounds, and then a third pregnancy, and did not lose the weight after each of those children, not more than, you know, maybe 15, 20 pounds. And I was at home alone with these kids, and I knew what I was doing with food. And I realized that I had a terrible problem. And I wasn't much of a dieter. I had not found that diets worked for me. I just despaired all the time about this feeling like I was almost possessed, that food ran my life. It was the first thing I thought of in the morning because I was going to do a better job today. And then at the end of the day, I would beat myself up and be miserable over what I'd done with food and go to bed upset. When I got into program and I got abstinent and I started working the steps, I realized that I probably could have been a drug addict, a sex addict, an alcoholic, any number of other things, because really what I have is a compulsion. And my compulsion with food is all about doing away with emotions that I don't want to feel and dealing with life when life seems very unmanageable to me. And the way I always did that was to stuff my face. I would stuff my feelings because I'm just looking to see, I don't see any men in the room. You know, I like to be careful about how I say this, but I know that I've been told many times that overeating is a good girl disease. Many people who overeat because their emotions, and I'm one of them, do so because many of the emotions that I don't like, I was raised to believe were impolite. It's not okay to be angry. It's not okay to speak up for oneself. It's not okay to cry. It's anything extreme is not okay. And so I would have these huge emotions and I would just them away. Fortunately, I found program. You know, yes, I lost weight, but what I gained was my sanity. And it took me almost 3 years to work the 12 steps. And I know there are people that work them in a month, talk to their sponsors every day, whatever. No, my sponsor was painstakingly slow with me. And it took me a long time to get through the steps. And she said to me, when we finish these steps, you should think about doing the traditions. And I said, why? And she said, well, the steps keep us from killing ourselves. And the traditions keep us from killing each other. And I'm sure some of you have heard that before. I had never heard that before, of course, because I was sort of new to program. And I, in fact, am working through the traditions right now with a fellow. We talk every week. Sometimes we miss a week. And we work on usually a tradition. And sometimes it gets stretched out a little bit. But I have some things that I have learned. And I'm just going to share those with you. I'm assuming that that is okay, that that falls into line with what your expectations are for this evening. If not, my apologies, because that's what I'm going to share. So I'm going to start with the reading at the very beginning under the Roman numeral one. It says the AA tradition. To those now in its fold, Alcoholics Anonymous has made the difference between misery and sobriety. And I can say that Overeaters Anonymous has made every difference in my life between misery and being in the food. It continues by saying, and often the difference between life and death. I don't think I would have ever killed myself, but I can tell you that I got up every day not wanting to live, not feeling like my life had any merit. And the only thing that probably would have kept me from ever hurting myself was that I did bury a brother. I saw what that did to my parents. I saw what that did to his spouse and his kids. It wasn't intentional. He just died. But I would not willingly put anyone through that. But I had kind of a living death going on in my life before program. And I do believe that OA has given me back my life. In the next paragraph, it says, therefore, no society of men and women ever had a more urgent need for continuous effectiveness and permanent unity. I completely agree with this. I feel that the only way that OA can be effective is if there's unity. The whole way that program works is for me to come out of isolation and be unified to other people that share my problem. They may share it in many different ways, but we all have the same problem. We all have a problem with food. And I cannot recover in isolation by myself. If I could have, I would have done it decades ago. I only recover through the strength of this program. And it is urgent. It's urgent. I am very careful about whether I mention program to people or not. I'm certainly not going to bring it up to somebody just because I think they have a weight problem if they don't express to me that they want or need help. But I can just look around and I see how many people use many things, including food, to deal with life. It continues with, we alcoholics see that we must work together and hang together. One of the things that I recently did is that I really like in-person meetings. I was heartbroken when my in-person meeting where I got abstinent went to Zoom during the pandemic. And then kind of towards the end of the pandemic, there weren't that many people coming. They tried to do it back in person. It didn't work. And then there was another meeting in the greater Baltimore area. I'm in the greater Baltimore metropolitan area. And there was another group at the exact same time on Zoom. And so they just decided to get rid of our meeting and everybody just started going to the other meeting that was left. And it broke my heart. I love my in-person meeting. I love sitting in a room with other people. I love the hugs. I love making friends with people that live near me, that are in this program, that I can see outside of the room. I like being accountable. I like that people can see me from head to toe. You know, not that anybody's judging, but I just feel accountable to people and seen and heard. And I like that. So one of the first things I did this past year was I really felt that I wanted to see my meeting come back in some way, shape, or form. And so I went to a Zoom meeting from the Baltimore Inner Group and started kind of trolling around for anyone who felt the same way that I did. And I found a guy who'd been in program for 30 years, and he and I began to commiserate. And I started calling churches, and we found a church that gave us a room. And we now have an in-person meeting on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. And it has been wonderful for me. And I'm meeting all these people that live in the area where I can go for a walk with someone on a Saturday morning or go get coffee with someone and just talk program.
That's 10 minutes.
Thank you so much. So, you know, that's very helpful to me. And it's that unity and it's that hanging out together. I am jealous now that I'm much more accepting of the whole AA thing, that AA people seem to hang together a lot. I've had two sponsees who are in dual recovery, and their whole lives are built around AA and the things that they do, especially giving service together. So let's see, what else did I highlight here? And nothing more here. So I guess I'll start with the traditions. So tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity, or in this case, OA unity. So I wrote here that my strength in recovery comes from the unity. That's where it comes from. It comes from that OA unity. And I cannot ever, 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 ever recover alone. So the unity and the common welfare of the group must come first. Because if it doesn't come first for me, then the group could disband or fall apart. And when it does, there's no place for people to go. So this unity really, really matters. And the truth is, for me, my personal recovery is linked to that group recovery. As long as the group is strong, as long as OA as a whole is strong, as long as all of us are able to support it through service, then OA is there for everybody, including me. Two, for our group purposes, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as, and I know you guys are gender neutral, so I don't know what to do with the pronoun here, as blank may express blank self in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And I wrote here that the group conscience, when I first came in, my very first in-person meeting, it was the most curious thing. I got to watch my time here. I know I got about 10 minutes. It was in the basement of a church. And everybody sat in a circle, and there were a lot of people at this meeting. There were so many people at this meeting that when they got in the circle, it blocked the door. So there was no way out. And so I was trapped in that room. I was in my chair. I didn't know what anyone was doing. They were passing the 12 and 12, which I didn't know what it was. And this old lady next to me was like, read here, read this paragraph. And I, you know, whatever. And then they had a group conscience afterwards. And there was a little bit of bickering because somebody wanted to put a time limit on shares. and somebody else felt very strongly that there should be no time limit. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is ugly stuff. I just got to get out of here. And I wound up not being my home group anyway. But I got to tell you, I think I didn't go to a group conscience for 2 years after that. I would make sure I left the meeting before any group conscience, even during the pandemic on Zoom. If there was a group conscience, I was gone. I left because I was afraid of them, because I feel like it's messy. Group consciences are messy. In our in-person group, we have not made a donation yet to the church that has so graciously hosted us. We are in our third month of meeting there. And we did not make a donation this past month because during the group conscience, when we got to the point where we were discussing money, our 10-minute limit ran out, and it's at the beginning of the meeting, and it was time for the rest of the meeting. And they said, well, we'll table that until the next meeting. We had enough prudent reserve. All we had to do was decide how much goes to World Service and how much goes to intergroup and how much was left for the church. And I was like so frustrated. It was like, it's this little tiny thing, but the group was unified on the fact that we would follow these particular procedures that they had put in place, and it will just have to wait till the end of March for the next group conscience meeting to come around. I find that frustrating, but I have to accept that there's a higher power at work in the group and that not everything is going to be Francis's way. And whether it seems good or not at the time or later, it just is what it is. We are all just trusted servants, whether we've been here a day or we've been here, 1,000 days or 20 years or 30 years, whatever. It doesn't mean that anyone has the answers. And often the newest person has some of the most fresh ideas. So I remember that. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. I've always struggled with this word membership because when I was new, it gave me the idea that this was like a country club or something where you had to sign up. I love the fact that OA is so welcoming. I just show up, I sit down. That's it. I don't really feel like I'm a member of anything. I just feel like I'm at home whenever I go to a meeting, because no matter what meeting I go to, I know that people speak my language and that they understand me, and I usually understand them. I feel like everybody who comes here is looking for help. Thank you. So I think that everyone is welcome. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other OA groups and other AA groups as a whole. I always struggle with this autonomous thing because sometimes I'll go to meetings and I'll think, I don't know, does that really line up with the traditions? But I think that it's nice that there's a certain level of freedom within each group, as long as nothing in that the group is doing would have a poor effect or reflection on OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to alcoholics who still suffer. Starting that Monday night meeting for me was all about reaching people. And I get so excited when newcomers come and they walk in and they're so nervous and scared and they sit down just like I did. And I get to give back what was so graciously given to me at meetings. A six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facilities or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Our primary purpose is to help people who are struggling with food just like we are. And nothing should interfere with that for me. And I try to make that my business. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. I got scolded in my Monday night meeting because we needed something photocopied. And I was like, yeah, I'll just photocopy that at work. And they said, oh, you can't do that. You can't copy anything at work. You need to go somewhere where you pay to photocopy it. You should never bring anything into an OA meeting that is on anybody else's property, whether it's the paper, the ink, anything. And I was thinking, oh, that's so legalistic. But I adhere to it. And I trust in the fact that it should be self-supporting. And in my personal life, I need to be self-supporting and not overly leaning on people. This is one of the traditions that speaks to my personal life, that Francis needs to take care of Francis and not be leaning on other people or expecting other people to do the hard work for me. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And all I got from that is that when I come to OA, it can be very tempting for me to want to use my professional skills in these rooms. And that's just not necessary. I just need to bring Francis into the room. Sometimes I can use a skill that I've developed or honed at work, but I try to do so in a way that's discreet. And I find that when I leave my skills, my work experience kind of outside of the rooms, am a much humbler person. And in my particular case, I need to be really careful about my ego. Nine, AA is such. Oh, I think my timer just went off as done. So I don't know if I have any more minutes left. I'll read one more step if there is. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. I'm super grateful for World Service. I have served on the OA Baltimore Area Intergroup, and it's fascinating to me, if you've never been to one of those meetings, the minutiae in those meetings. To me, it's like sticking wood underneath my nails to go to those meetings, because they go on and on and on, and they just pull everything apart, and they're so meticulously careful about everything. But after quite a few months serving, I realized how important it is and how grateful I am to those people that do that work that I normally would not do by choice, just by turn, because this is a wonderful place and it needs to be cared for, just like a garden would be cared for and tended. And that takes responsible people who don't rush through decisions. And so that's it. Now I'm at step nine, I mean, tradition nine. So I think I'm out of time. If I'm not, let me know.
Yes, you're just about there.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. I'm going to close with that. Thank you so
Thank
much
you
for letting
so
me
much,
share.
Frances.
Oh, no. I hope it was what you were looking for.
That was wonderful. Clarissa was okay. Everybody's raising their hands. Great. We will now open the meeting for questions or for 3 minutes each. As this is a big book study, sharing a question should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask you to accept the guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions, or star 9 if you're on the phone. I will call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Would the timekeeper please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when the time is up? Thank you, Angela. If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. Okay, so let's start. Clarissa, welcome. Try it now. No?
I think it was a huge meeting or a regional meeting or something like that. And so what they were voting on was that they wanted to be able to make it across the board that they can give away a big book for free. And, you know, when it came to everybody's vote, one person stood up and said, "We are a small meeting. We can't afford to do that." And everything stopped. It's like everybody has to agree in order for something to happen. That gave me a sense of pride, in this healthy pride, because we talk about pride, it's one of our character defects, in the sense that I did not feel ashamed to be part of a 12-step program. Because where in this world do you see that kind of unity where everybody has to agree, even the small person? So you brought it to life again for me, and I'm really, really grateful, because you brought it to a very personal level for me, and you did a great job. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Clarissa. Next, we have Chanel. Hi.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Hi, I'm still Chanel. I'm still a grateful compulsive eater, and I get to live in recovery today purely by the grace of God. Frances, thanks for hitting that home run. And I think you and I must have had the same family, even though we didn't grow up in the same place, because we had to always be polite. We had to not rock the boat, and we weren't supposed to express our feelings. That was, you know, and especially if you could express happiness as long as you weren't loud about it, but please do not cry, because that's somehow, I don't know, wrong. And so I thought that was funny when you said that. And also, you know, I used to really, when I first came in, I was like, oh, traditions, okay, fine, I'll read them, whatever. No, like really, I didn't get it. I really didn't get it at all. But when we look at the history of AA, and I'm not claiming to be a historian of that whatsoever, but just as AA as our grandpapa program, you know, they were falling apart. Like they had this beautiful book, they had all this wonderful stuff going on, but people were infighting constantly. It was just a mess. So some of the, I love that instead of a set of bylaws, you will, they're traditions. I love that because I'm not the best rule follower sometimes. So when you tell me that something's a rule or a law, I inherently dislike it a lot of the time, unless it's something like don't kill other people. But I, the traditions, like just the idea that we're trying for unity and we're trying to protect everyone. I love that. And I just wanted to ask you, because you didn't get to talk about them in 10 and 11 and 12, if there's anything you'd like to say about one of those. And that'll be my question. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chanel, for your kind words. I make notes for each of them. For 10, the one about AA having no opinion on outside issues. I was going to recount a small little story. I have a fellow who I talk to every day and have for 3 years. And this fellow was very angry because somebody brought up an outside issue in their meeting. And this person had a very strong opinion on that outside issue. And I think the other person had a differing opinion. And then my friend began to rant in a recorded message to me all about this outside issue. And I remember thinking, I don't want to hear this, because now I'm thinking about that outside issue. And when I hear outside issues, what I immediately think of is, how is everybody different from me? OA unifies and outside issues often divide. And they bring in splintering, fractioning, all that sort of thing, whether it's over politics or whether it's over religion or over lifestyles or whatever. Outside issues really just don't have any place in the meetings. And it can be tricky, especially when big world events happen and people are upset and they want to talk about it in a meeting. Now, that's a tough one, but I really try with OA fellows never, ever, even outside of a meeting, to ever talk about outside issues if I can help it. It just, for me, works better not to. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Frances. Next up. Joe.
I am Joe. I'm a compulsive overeater. I am a big time not fan of the traditions, in terms of just like, oh, the traditions. It's like, they're definitely the redheaded stepchild of all the readings, I think. And because I hear a lot of people say the same thing. But it occurred to me while we were talking that it's sort of like the Constitution. Like, you don't have to read it every day and you don't have to memorize it and everything, but it's kind of what keeps things going, you know, and it's what everything else is based on. And the thing I was so struck with when you were talking about the traditions was that I don't know how, if anybody in here is remotely like me, and we hear all the time in meetings that we're like each other, I have no business deciding how an organization is going to be run. Like, I do that whole thing from the big book where I want to be the director and hang the scenery and be the actor and all that kind of stuff. So that's, don't put me in charge. And because I want to be in charge and I would tell you what to do and I get my feelings hurt and then I would blame you and whatever, all the immature stuff that I do. So a whole bunch of us, or a whole bunch of people like us, almost 100 years ago, sat down and put these ideas together for a way to run an organization that in my mind is different from any other organization I've ever encountered. I don't know of any other organization that says we do not govern and yet somehow we run, or any other organization that says, you know, we don't talk about ourselves outside and still manage to exist and get the word out to people. Like, it's this always growing organization that doesn't promote itself. Like, how does that even happen? So I think this is the first time I've ever felt grateful for a meeting on the traditions. Rock on. This was awesome. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Joe. That was terrific. It's 8:48. And I just wanted to say we will now stop the recording for unrecorded questions or shares. Would the Zoom host please stop the